Welcome to Midlothian Council's meeting today. Apologies from the Provost, he's unwell, but we hope we'll send our best wishes to him to get better, obviously, with the festive season coming. Can I ask for apologies?
Thanks, Deputy Provost. Other than the Provost, there are no other apologies today. Thank you.
My apologies, I forgot to read this notice out. This meeting of Midlothian Council will be broadcast live to the internet and will be stored as part of the Council webcast archive. I have the discretion to terminate or suspend filming if, in my opinion, allowing filming to continue would prejudice the proceedings of the meeting. Equally so, items that are heard in private will not be available to the public. Members are reminded that the cameras are activated by the sound system and that they must switch on microphones when speaking and off when finished. Thank you. The order of business.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. The order of business is as per the agenda that's previously been circulated. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any declarations of interest? You can declare at this moment or as we move through the agenda. Yes, Councillor.
Thank you. I have a declaration at the very last item on Bright Sparks because a family member is involved.
Thank you. There are no deputations and there are no questions to the Leader of the Council. The minutes to the previous meeting, Midlothian Council, 7th of November. Questions? No. Sorry. Can we have a mover and a seconder? Cute. The Cabinet, the 10th of October. Can we have a mover and a seconder? Planning Committee, the 3rd of October. Mover and a seconder? That's fine. And be reminded we don't need to. Are there any questions arising from the minute of that meeting? General Purposes Committee, the 3rd of October. The Appeals Committee, the 22nd of June. And the Local Review Body on the 10th of October. The Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee on the 5th of September. The Audit. There were no minutes submitted for consideration. Standards, again, no minutes submitted. The petitions, there was no petitions meeting. The Police, Fire and Rescue Board, 21st of August. And no additional minutes for consideration. Thank you. And I see there are no questions to the Leader. So we go on to the motions that have been presented by note of motions. Moved by Councillor Curran and seconded by Councillor Russell.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. I'll just read the motion out for the benefit of anyone who doesn't have a copy. And it reads that Midlothian Council supports Shelter Scotland's campaign for national action on homelessness. 2, recognises that every 19 minutes a household in Scotland becomes homeless. And 3, notes that while we know there is a great deal of good practice, projects and people working in each local authority working to ensure everyone has a safe place to call home, Scotland is in the grip of a housing crisis. A national action must be taken to ensure all local authorities in Scotland have clear strategic direction in order to fix homelessness. I'll just make a couple of comments. Provost, Scotland is in the grip of a housing, no any different from the rest of the UK actually, in the grip of a housing crisis. And Midlothian is no different, with over 4,800 people and individuals and families on the housing list. And that's despite this council embarking on an extensive house building programme over the last 10 years. We've completed the build of over 1,000 council houses. And that programme continues with a commitment earlier in the year by this council to build an additional 1,000 over the term of this council. With regards to our temporary accommodation, I do think there's still work to be done. However, I also believe that the council has taken the correct approach by seeking alternatives to the bed and breakfast model, by utilising and refurbishing vacant assets for temporary accommodation. that can be, sorry, that's accompanied by the necessary integrated support services, such as housing officers, which we see up at Pentland House that was opened just a couple of months ago. Also in Pentland House, there's a 24/7 support service, and that's by the Salvation Army, who also provide other similar support, such as employability support, which is a challenging area for groups of such as homeless adults. In Midlothian, I've stayed in Midlothian my entire life, it's rare to see anyone sleeping rough in Midlothian, but I have seen it twice. But because I think it's rare to see, it's probably easy to assume that we don't have an issue with homelessness, which is not the case. The most extreme form of homelessness is sleeping rough, sleeping outside in the street. However, many forms of homelessness are not quite as visible, such as women's refuge, sleeping in vehicles, and sofa surfing. I don't quite like that term, but it is a recognised term. Having said that, policy on homelessness in Scotland does appear to be shifting. The Scottish Government now have a short-life homeless and rough sleeping action group, and with the creation of a five-year fund to tackle homelessness, I'm sure with a coherent approach that this national policy commitment is an opportunity to halt the expected negative trajectory. Finally, Deputy Provost, it would be remiss of me not to mention the Sleep in the Park event that took place on the 9th of December at Princes Street Gardens. It was a bitterly cold night. I'm sure I'm joined by everyone in this chamber in paying tribute to all who participated in and supported the event, which is organised by Social Bite. Not only did it raise funds to tackle homelessness, but just as importantly, it also raised awareness. Deputy Provost, I move this motion. I hope Council can support it.
I'm happy to formally second that excellent report by my colleagues. There's nothing to add to that. Can I ask, is that Councillor?
Thank you, Deputy Provost. We're very happy to support the motion. We supported Shelter Scotland when they held their event in Jarnock Court about 6 weeks ago. I was going to mention the 8,000 people who took part in the Sleep in the Park event on Saturday, the 9th of December, many of whom were from Midlothian, and I thought it did a really fantastic job of highlighting the problem. I think because it's not visible, people tend to think, oh, well, we don't really have a problem with rough sleepers. They're out there. We just don't see them. So we are very happy to support the motion.
Thank you, Councillor McCall. Is there any other comments? Councillor Harris.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. I would like to echo the comments of Councillor McCall and Councillor Curran that obviously we all wish to do more to tackle the issues of homelessness across Scotland and in particular in Midlothian, and echo the sentiments about the fantastic work that organisations such as Shelter and other organisations including the Salvation Army and local churches do as well. Now, Councillor Curran touched upon the issue of the number of people on council housing waiting lists. Now, obviously, a lot of these people are people who, the reason they're on these council house waiting lists are because they can't afford to buy a house. And in Midlothian, where we have properties, the average price in excess of £200,000, we have people who should be able to afford to buy a house, unable to do so, and thus having to use social housing, which adds further pressure to the social housing, and meaning that other people in desperate need for social housing find themselves on a waiting list amongst people who really wish to buy a house and just can't afford to. And I think we need to recognise that that's an issue in Midlothian in particular, and that we need to do more to ensure affordable housing as well as tackling the issue of homelessness, because both these two issues feed through into the pressures on housing and the housing crisis across Scotland and Midlothian. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hardy. I take that this motion has been approved by full council. Thank you very much. We go on to the motion by Councillor Alexander and Councillor McCall.
Thank you. Again, I'll just read out the motion. Midlothian Council regrets the latest round of proposed RBS branch closures across the UK and in Midlothian towns of Bonnyrigg and Pennycook, believes that such closures are damaging to local RBS customers, businesses, community groups and the entire local community, and further believes the public are entitled to expect better from RBS, a bank which is still largely owned by the taxpayer, and that RBS and other high street banks be encouraged to work with the Scottish Government and communities to find alternatives to local branch closures in order to maintain local banking options. Furthermore, Midlothian Council commits to writing to RBS asking it to reconsider plans to close Midlothian branches, and further commits to writing to the Chancellor of the Exchequer to express Midlothian's dismay at this decision.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. I am so disappointed to speak to this motion. If Pennycook branch closes, then customers will need to travel to Dalkeith, and that will entail a car journey of around 30 minutes each way, or by bus around 50 minutes each way. And that's assuming that the customer lives in central Pennycook. I estimate that I would be quicker getting a bus into Edinburgh to use a Royal Bank rather than going over to Dalkeith. It's so disappointing, given that RBS is majority owned by the taxpayer, that these decisions to close branches have come about. I've written to the Chancellor of the Exchequer asking him to intervene, and Councillor Alexander's written to the Chief Executive of Royal Bank to ask them to reconsider these closures. It's just so disappointing that we're faced with this situation yet again, having had closures not that long ago in Newton Grange and before that in Gorebridge.
Thank you, Councillor McCall. Any other members? Councillor Curran.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. I'm also happy to support this motion. I think there's an increased risk of financial exclusion, particularly for older people who have difficulty accessing banks. Happy to support this motion.
Thank you, Councillor Curran. Any other members wish to talk on this? No? Quite happy to move this resolution, this motion. We can obviously write to ask the Chief Exec to write to Royal Bank of Scotland. Thank you. We now go on to item 8.1, which is a revision of the Council Standing Orders, report by John Blair, Director.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. This report invites Council to approve revisions to the existing Standing Orders. The background to the report is set out in Section 2, and myself, along with a number of colleagues, have worked closely with group leaders to review the existing Standing Orders. Looking forward, it is intended to update the Scheme of Administration in March 2018, the Scheme of Delegation in June 2018. Therefore, today, Council is invited to approve the three recommendations as detailed in Section 4, noting that to alter the existing Standing Orders requires at least 10 members to vote in favour of the change. Thanks, Deputy Provost.
Thank you, Director. Any members wish to comment? Thank you. As the Director said, we need 10 members to approve these standing orders. Can I ask for a show of hands? That's unanimous. Thank you. Item 8.2 is the Local Code of Corporate Governance 2017. Again, a report by John Blair, Director.
Deputy Provost, I'll actually ask my colleague Alan Turpey, the Monitoring Officer, to take Council through this report as he's been the author. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The purpose of the report is to seek approval of the draft Local Code of Corporate Governance, which has been prepared following an updated framework document from SIPFA Solace. Midlothian Council is responsible for ensuring that its business is conducted in accordance with the law and proper standards. This is to allow the public funds and the assets at its disposal to be safeguarded and used efficiently and effectively in pursuit of best value. In order to do so, the Council has, for some years, adopted framework guidance from SIPFA Solace to form the Midlothian Council Local Code of Corporate Governance. SIPFA Solace recently updated this framework, and a short-life working group involving representatives from internal audit, business transformation and legal have accordingly updated Midlothian Council's own code of corporate governance to reflect and comply with the new framework. The new framework moves from the previous 6 core principles of good governance to 7 such principles. The new principles reiterate the previous principles whilst also placing greater emphasis on defining sustainable economic, social and environmental outcomes and carrying out the necessary interventions to achieve those outcomes. The code before you today is in 2 parts. The first part outlines the actions the Council will take through its annual self-assurance and assessment plan to ensure that we continue to comply with the code. The second part of the code narrates the 7 core principles of good governance, together with 20 supporting sub-principles, 91 behaviours and actions which will deliver those principles, and the Council's responses which support the behaviours and will demonstrate good governance in practice. I do not intend to go through the code line by line today, but will happily answer any questions members of the committee of the Council may have, and otherwise ask the Council to consider approving the code. This would be subject to a comment made from the Audit Committee, who pointed out that following the takeover and rebranding by Ideagen, references to Covalent should now read Pentanum Performance. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Turbey. Any questions from the members? We agree to approve the updated. And thank you. Item 8.6, the Financial Strategy 2018. Papers. Apologies. Item 8.3, it's the report, the publication of the final report of the incident management report by Kenneth Laurie. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. The purpose of this report is to advise Council of the publication of the final report of the incident management team, dated November 2017, into the incident involving the ingress of carbon dioxide into houses at Newbury's Crescent and Gore Bridge. The report details the investigations conducted by the IMT and provides conclusions and recommendations which, if accepted, will require a variety of agencies, including this Council, to take action. The executive summary of the IMT report is attached at Appendix 1 to this report, and a full copy of that has been provided in the Members' Library and is available on the Committee Management System. In April 2014, NHS Lothian set up an incident management team to investigate reported cases of ill health affecting a number of the residents of a recently built housing development of 64 dwellings in Gore Bridge. The principal focus of the IMT is the protection of public health. Midlothian Council were actively involved in the incident as owners of the affected properties, and this has previously been reported to Council in various papers as set out in paragraph 2. Paragraph 2 also sets out the membership of the IMT. The final report of the IMT, including the conclusions and recommendations, is now brought before Council for information and necessary action. Key elements of the IMT's findings are set out at paragraph 3 of this report, including the fact that at an early stage the IMT identified and provided to the Council criteria against which any long-term options for the affected houses should be assessed, and that having reviewed 5 main remediation options in detail, Midlothian Council decided in June 2014 to rehouse all the residents and demolish the 64 properties on the site, to safeguard the future health of local residents. At paragraph 4, the report sets out that in September 2016, a second incident of carbon dioxide affecting recently constructed residential properties in Gore Bridge was identified, and that in light of that incident, the Midlothian Council Building Standards Service have implemented measures deemed appropriate to secure the health and safety of potential homeowners in the area. Turning to section 5 of the covering report, The IMT's recommendations are set out in Chapter 11 of their report and summarised in the executive summary, a copy of which is attached to Appendix 1. The IMT has made a series of 26 recommendations which will require actions by a variety of agencies, including this council. Recommendations 1 to 3 specifically relate to the incident and site and require action by the council, and these recommendations and the council's response are set out at paragraph 5.2. Further recommendations are made relating to the management of future incidents, national policy and guidance on mine migration risk, and research needs. Today, the recommendations in front of the council are set out at paragraph 8 of the report. And I would say that we're joined in the council chamber today by Professor Alison McCallum, the Director of Public Health, who can assist with any questions or issues that members may wish to raise. And Chair may also wish to just say a few words of introduction as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Exec. The members, any questions on this report? No questions? Councillor Small.
I'd like to ask the Chief Executive if, in the light of this report, we need to enlarge the risk register entries that concerning geological risk.
I would simply say that I think it's important that, in terms of the Council's risk register, that we're keenly aware of this issue. It is, as I understand, included in the relevant departmental risk register, and as we review the risk register going forward, we will have to take due consideration as to whether it lies at the corporate level.
I'll ask Councillor Johnson, and then I will ask the expert to come in. Thank you.
Thank you. I have concerns that this is the report just talks about this in a Scottish issue, but I think it's a UK issue, and I would like an additional recommendation put in that we notify the appropriate departments in the United Kingdom government to highlight what can happen in mining and former mining areas.
Thank you.
Chair, I'd simply say before Professor McCallum comes in that the recommendations do also relate in part to the UK government as well as the Scottish government.
Thank you very much. I'm also joined by Dr. Richard Otieno, consultant in public health, who's an environmental public health expert and who chaired the incident management team. This was a rare and complex incident. I'm grateful to the council and council officers for the support they've given this multi-agency work. As Councillor Johnson has pointed out, there are wider implications for Scottish Government and UK Government in the recommendations, and we will be writing on those matters following approval of Council to the report, and obviously your advice on that is very welcome. I think I wanted to flag up two things. One is that the quality of the multi-agency work in this incident. This was an environmental health issue that initially presented to the NHS. And also to commend the Council for the care for people arrangements that were put in place as part of this, which I think would act as an exemplar for other bodies. And I would urge you to ensure that those arrangements are put in place to the same standard should any other incident occur in future. I think that's all I wanted to say in response to this, and I'm happy to take any further questions, but we'll act on Councillor Johnson's comments.
Thank you, Professor. Any other questions?
Thanks, Deputy Provost. Could I just check if this paper is accepted today, will extend out to the private sector in terms of their building programs and registered social landlords as well?
That's why we have Scottish Government planning authorities in our sites in terms of the recommendations, but from a local for information and advisement, yes, we'd obviously be happy to make that available.
Yes, Councillor Muirhead.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. I'm happy to move the recommendations in this report here today, but I feel that, you know, I think it's right that we recognise that the Council handled this in the most effective way possible, but I think we should also spare a thought to the disruption for the people that were involved, because, you know, to read the report, you know, it's kind of suggesting that, you know, we've done everything fine, and so, you know, we're almost congratulating ourselves how well we've handled it. There were a lot of ups and downs along the way, and, you know, that we've got to bear in mind that this incident went on for a long, long time, and the people have only been rehoused in the last, basically the last couple of months. Some of them have reached their final location after having been moved out of this area. So I think, you know, while I'm pleased that the report has you know, the recommendations that it's making and recognising the action that the Council took, it wasn't without its hardships as far as the people that were concerned, that were involved were concerned.
No, absolutely not. And we couldn't have done this without the support of the community. Sorry, I didn't want to let anybody think that I wasn't.
Thank you. Any other members? So happy to move the recommendations. Thank you. We're on to 8.4, which is the Audit Scotland report, Local Government in Scotland Financial Overview. Again, it's a report by Kenneth Laurie.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. The purpose of this report is to provide the Council with a summary of the Audit Scotland report, Local Government in Scotland Financial Overview 2016-17, and the Council's position in relation to the report's findings. And this report has already been considered by the Council's Audit Committee. The Financial Overview 2016-17 was published by the Accounts Commission in November of this year. The report provides a high-level, independent view of Council's financial performance and position in 2016-17 and is aimed primarily at councillors and senior council officers as a source of information and to support them in their roles. The report is in three parts. Part 1 comments on Council's income and budgets for 2016-17. Part 2 looks at Council's financial performance during that year and their position at the end of it. And Part 3 looks at Council's 2017-18 finances and the challenges faced going forwards. And the report includes a series of, I think, fairly stark messages about the financial challenges facing councils, and perhaps gives a sense that we're reaching something of a tipping point in relation to local government finance. And I don't think these issues will come as a surprise to members in this chamber in the context of our own financial strategy. The main findings of the report are set out at 2.6, and there's more detail about each element of the report at paragraphs 3.1, 3.2, and 3.3. And in relation to each of these, there is a brief commentary on Midlothian's position, including the utilisation of reserves in 2016-17 and the impact on general fund reserves as a result, and also the position as we move to balance the 2018-19 budget. The recommendation is that the Council is asked to note the Audit Scotland report and the position of the Council in relation to the key messages. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Laurie. Any members have any questions? Happy to agree this report. Thank you. Item 8.5, Services to Community Property Rationalisation, a report by John Blair and Mary Smith. Thank you.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. I'll start before handing to my colleague, Mary Smith. This report is presented to Council today with two clear purposes. Firstly, to update members on the services to communities reviews, specifically in the Mayfield and Newton Grange areas. And secondly, to seek Council approval to close New Battlepool and Mayfield Leisure Centre upon the opening of the new Battle Community campus in the spring of 2018. Section 2.1 of the report outlines the background, starting with the council meeting in June 2013, which approved the replacement of New Battle Community High School with enhanced community facilities. Sections 2.2 and 2.3 of the report details the background and the governance relating to the services to communities review, and the financial aspects are set out in the table on page 87. Section 2.4 refers to the Business Transformation Steering Group and specifically to the special meeting of the group held on the 4th of December 2017 where the matter was considered. Section 3.1 outlines and provides detail and commentary on the community facilities to be provided at the New Battle Community Campus, which I've said earlier opens in spring 2014. The remainder of Section 3 provides commentary on the condition of the two existing facilities at New Battle Pool and Mayfield Leisure. Deputy Provost, as I said earlier, at this juncture, I will pass to my colleague, Dr Mary Smith, to update the Council on the significant ongoing work within the communities of Mayfield and Newton Grange, being led by Mary's Directorate. Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, John. The officers from the Council have been working with the community representatives in both Mayfield and Newton Grange, and that was one of the things we were asked in the original report in 2013. In Mayfield, we've worked with the Mayfield In It Together group, made up of representatives of various organisations, to work on regenerating the town centre. The Mayfield In It Together group are looking for financial support to undertake a master planning exercise similar to the one undertaken in Stobhill and Newton Grange. They've secured 40k Borders Rail funding, 15k in another small grant funding, and support in kind from the Council, but they're looking for substantially more funding, and we're supporting them to try to achieve this. The group are pragmatic about the closure of Mayfield Leisure Centre, as they know it would be unaffordable to run, and what they wish to do is secure the land and the car park area for a community asset transfer. And this would give them a stake in any future development of Mayfield regeneration. And this was discussed with the group as recently as last week. So it's not something new, it's something we've been discussing. And they've been quite clear when we've been speaking to them that they couldn't afford to run the Mayfield Leisure Centre as a community asset transfer. In relation to Newton Grange, we've been working with Newton Grange Partnership Group, and that was originally set up by Councillor Pottinger some time ago. And what he wanted to achieve, that the officers were talking to the key people in Newton Grange. So we've been working with representatives from Castle Rock Edinvar, the Church of Scotland and the Community Council to include them in the master planning exercise that's taking place. The group, again, are pragmatic about what is affordable, and none of them want to see the closure of the library and what the community call the trim centre, the leisure centre in Newton Grange. However, the community representatives are clear that if the town centre is regenerated, and that is to include community facilities, then they know the buildings such as the pool, the leisure centre, Gardner Place, etc., would need to close. The work undertaken in both communities is supported by a range of organisations, which I anticipate is representative of their own communities. Section 3.1, as John points out, sets out the fantastic facilities that are going to be available and the opening hours, which will be available to the public around Easter. Section 4 sets out the timeline for closure of these buildings, and Section 5.1 sets out the savings from the buildings, and Section 7 sets out the recommendations as set out in the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Mary Smith. Can I have anyone, any questions? Any?
Thank you, Deputy Provost. I've been talking to a lot of people in the community about these proposals, and the one thing that's been clear to me is that they stand by what they've always said, is that they don't want to lose these assets. Now, what shape or form that takes, we don't know yet, because the master plans haven't been concluded. So I think some of the proposals here are premature. I think what we're suggesting is that we shut things without actually necessarily knowing what we do after that. So potentially you've got a patch of land that will just turn into a dumping ground that will be no use to anybody. And because of that, I support that we continue the master plans and that we engage with the communities. But I have to side with the communities on this, is that we can't close these facilities until we know what we can do. And I mean, there's potential here that we can keep these and actually use them as something else. So on that, I would move an amendment that recommendations 2 and 3 are removed.
Councillor Muirhead.
See, there lies the problem with this whole agenda. The SNP group seem to think that they can take decisions not to close something, yet remove the funding that is required to keep the facilities open. I have to say that this whole issue has been pretty poorly handled from the beginning, both by the previous administration and to some extent by the officers of the council. If we go right back to the initial consultation on the new Battle High School, it was quite clear that the SNP administration at that time instructed officers to go out to consultation on this issue, but to avoid talking about the closures that would have to happen as a result of the new high school if it was to have the facilities in it that we are actually going to have. And I actually recall, round about that time, a citizens' panel a questionnaire that went out. And when people were asked if they would rather have community facilities within their own communities, leisure facilities within their own communities, or a super centre, the majority of people actually said they would rather have the facilities in their own communities. Now, when we had a vote in this council, which is mentioned in this paper here back in 2013, I think it was, this group, the Labour group, recognised the position the people in the communities, and we voted to have a high school only, knowing that it wasn't feasible to have the high school with the leisure and swimming pool facilities in it, and maintain everything across the board in some of the communities. Now, the administration took the view that it could do both, which was unrealistic. Now, what's happened is, as I mentioned at the last council meeting, or perhaps the one before, the Business Transformation Steering Group has been considering for some time. One of the strands has been the savings that would result from the closure of both of these facilities. Now, the SNP group have tried to argue that they weren't aware that was the case, and that the savings included the closure of these facilities. It clearly is the case, yet we're here today, and again, the SNP group appears to be arguing to keep these facilities open when they've been allowing strands of work to go forward that are assuming that these facilities are going to close. It's just a farce of a way of dealing with things. The papers that are before us today quite clearly show that the SNP group were well aware that the strands of savings mentioned in these reports included the closure of these facilities. It seems to me, Deputy Provost, that it's clearly the SNP's intent here to try to saddle the current administration with the decision to close these two facilities when they always themselves intended to do so. I recall having a conversation with Councillor Constable around the time that these discussions were taking place, and his view was, it'll no matter, people will vote with their feet and they'll close anyway. These facilities will close anyway. which I didn't think is as the right way to go about it, is a dishonest way to go about it. Frankly, we can't have the council in its current financial situation having a leisure centre a few hundred yards away from a state-of-the-art community facility with leisure facilities, as would be the case with Mayfield Leisure Centre, or indeed a swimming pool less than a mile away from a new pool at New Battle. I don't think it was ever feasible that these things would happen, and I think we were just kidding people on that we were going to be able to achieve that. I think that when I say that it's been badly handled as far as officers are concerned, I think that there should have been challenges to that, to the previous administration from officers when they were publicly making statements that these facilities wouldn't close, while at the same time allowing them to go forward and produce proposals through the BTSG that would result in exactly that happening. As a result of this, if you think about the Last Wade Centre and the process that we went through to rationalise facilities all the way that surrounded that into the one facility, what we did during that process was to make sure that all the community's activities that went on and all the facilities round about would be accommodated in the new location. Now, because of the fact that these closures haven't been included in, for instance, our consultation on the budget, we've no had that facility, so that opportunity. So what I would like to recommend is that we agree the recommendations on the paper, but add one that says that we need to make sure that all the services that are currently accommodated in the facilities that are to close will be able to be accommodated in the new centre. And that, you know, with a slight bit of give and take as far as timing's concerned, but that we try to accommodate them in roughly the same sort of time slots as they have at the moment in the existing facilities. That exercise, I think, needs to be gone through, and I think I would want to add a recommendation along these lines. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. I second Councillor Muirhead's recommendations. I wrote to the Chief Executive back in October asking what the position was regarding these facilities, since learning that in February this year a budget was put forward by the SNP at the time, which included £2.5 million of future year savings for next year. Having discovered that included the closure of not just Mayfield Leisure Centre and New Battle Pool, but Dander Hall, facilities in Dander Hall, and also the library in Mayfield and in Newton Grange. I asked questions then about what was happening with staff training, with transfer of assets, and what work had been going on with the community. I know, thanks to Mary Smith, that there has been work ongoing with the In It Together group. But the issue here, and one of the problems with this paper, is no one has actually said to the community that the decision, or at least the funding to close these facilities, or removing the funding to close these facilities, would be taking place in 2018-19. So if you ask people in the community, were you consulted about the closure of these facilities specifically, they'll say no. And that's where the difficulty lies. And I think that it put officers in a position where they had to skirt around the issue. And that's why this paper's here today, to kind of make that specific decision. What this paper does is also link to the financial strategy, which is the next paper, and I've seen public comments by the SNP group saying Labor's blowing the budget for next year. That is Next year's budget was incumbent on £2.5 million worth of savings that was passed and approved by the SNP earlier this year, which included, as I said earlier, the closure of not just these two facilities but five others. And the reason why the budget gap has now grown is because we've worked to uncover exactly what these future savings were. And the fact that the Business Transformation Steering Group has been discussing these and planning these and putting them in future year budgets without actually being honest with the community and going there, out there and explaining exactly what they're for. I think it's a tragic situation that we find ourselves discussing this now when we had the opportunity through the budget engagement process that we've just been having over the last couple of months, where these proposals could have been put to the community and people could have responded. We're now in a situation where the new facilities open in April, and one of my concerns would be that we don't have the money to staff, you know, in Mayfield in particular, two centres a stone's throw distance away. It would mean recruiting new staff, then letting people go after one of the facilities closes. It means buying up extra equipment. I find it absolute financial madness. I just cannot understand how we're sitting here today debating this. But it is what it is, and I think we need to just make the decision and move on.
Thank you, Councillor Haggett. Councillor Baird, can I ask you to formalise your motion and obviously get a seconder?
Okay, so the amendment would be to delete recommendations 2 and 3 from the paper.
Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. I'm happy to second those recommendations, but I would just like to address some of the points that Councillor Muirhead and Councillor Hackett just raised, because they used some very concerning language like discovered and uncovered and SNP's intent to close facilities. And I would just like to remind this Council that the decision that the SNP took in 2013, and to be completely clear, was to build a purpose-built school with community facilities and to retain all the community facilities. And actually, Jim just said administration took the decision at the time that it could do both, and that's exactly what we decided to do. And it was the Labour group that argued against having a more improved school for that area, despite building a similar facility in Bonnyrigg. So I want to make it quite clear that the SNP group in September 2013, supported by a Labour councillor, I might add, as well, who voted against the group and voted against the Labour group, and quite rightly so at the time, to back up that proposal. That has never changed. The point that I do perhaps agree with is that there should never have been any budgetary saving attributed to a decision that hadn't been taken yet. The remarks made about BTSG, I think, I know that Labour didn't attend BTSG for 5 years. However, the rest of us did get up in the morning and go to that committee. But I think there should never be a case where there's a committee that can take a decision out with this council's decision. It's for all councillors here to make decisions on these types of decisions, including leisure facilities, and that's exactly what we're doing now. I just want to make it quite clear what the SNP's position was in 2013 and that position stands absolute today.
Thank you, Councillor Parry. Councillor Milligan.
Yeah, Provost, I was hoping not to get drawn into the who done what and who didn't do. And Councillor Parry's quite right. We built a very similar facility in Bonnyrigg. However, we worked with the communities and we closed doing all the out-of-date and older facilities to accommodate the Last Wade Centre, and it's been a roaring success. But let's be quite clear here. I accept Councillor Parry's position in 2013. They fully supported retaining all these facilities. But very clearly in this paper here, for 2014 onwards, they allowed officers to go away and work towards building rationalisation. And indeed, as time went on, they became even more specific in where that building rationalisation was going to be. And it was subject around the new Shawfair development and the new high school community facilities going in there and the new battle facilities that were going in there. And indeed, they became very, very specific about the areas they were talking about, and that was the council buildings in Dander Hall, Newton Grange and Mayfield Leisure Centre, as part of property rationalisation, and in 2016 that was very clear. And I can go back to the handwritten notes for the officers at the time. It was made very, very clear that the budget savings were from rationalisation of the buildings as these new facilities opened. In other words, no money to run them, no money to pay staff in them, no heating, no lighting, no rates, nothing. So the reality is they were removing the funding for them. I think the critical point here, and I'm quite surprised SNP aren't prepared to actually back what Councillor Muirhead says here, because one of the critical areas that worked really well at the last Wade Centre was actually sitting down with all the user groups, and this is the point Councillor Muirhead's making, all the people who use the facilities, because it's quite clear when we sit and talk and you hear talking in the public about we need to save these facilities or we want these facilities, quite often it's not actually the people who are using them. So it's really important that not just the groups that currently use Newton Grange Pool or the gymnastics or the taekwondo groups that use Mayfield Leisure Centre, but all the groups that use these centres, and including the public, that there's a dire effort to sit down with them and timetable in. And that's exactly what we've done at the last Wade Centre, where each of the groups were timetabled in. So it makes sure that all the groups that are currently using the facilities and all the public that are using the existing facilities are accommodated in the time slots or there and around the time slots that they're used to having, to make sure that they've moved in to this more up-to-date, standard, fully built facility that people now have right on their doorsteps. And there needs to be further consultation, and I take Councillor Baird's point quite rightly, that Director Mary Smith has said that there's been conversations with the Mayfield groups and the Newton Grange groups, and it's what usage of these buildings that are finished. There is a community asset transfer, and if that's what people are happy to do, then quite happily work along with them. And I think Mary's making the point that there has been a lot of work done and in it together group in Mayfield and the town centre and planning group in Newton Grange. And I think that's critical. But I think when we have these new facilities, and this is about making sure that the people who use these facilities are accommodated in this new facility, and I think that work needs to be done urgently.
Thank you, Councillor Milligan. Anybody want to contribute to this debate? I think we'll, that being the case, I think we'll... Councillor Johnson.
There's a couple of things that I take issue with, and one is the Newton Grange Partnership Group. I only became aware of that group a few months ago, so I don't know if it was someone else, Brian Pottinger's, intention to keep that a secret from me or not, but I was really disappointed to find out that lots of things had been discussed and going on in the community without me even knowing about it. And I don't think you should be saying this has been badly handled by the SNP. We wanted the children in Mayfield and Gorebridge to have equal facilities to the children in Lasswade and the Bonnerig area. Why should the children in one of our most recognised deprived areas have lesser than a well-off area? I think that was an appalling suggestion by anybody to make. We always knew that these facilities would cost money to run. We absolutely knew they wouldn't run on fresh air. And for anybody to be suggesting otherwise is not being very correct. The other thing is, these suggestions are far too premature, just as my colleague Kenneth Baird has mentioned. And I think that is reflecting badly and causing anxiety and a drop in morale in the southeast of this county. And that reflects on the Labour administration. After all, in 2013, Derek and Jim criticised us quite heavily for our poor consultations, and it would appear that your consultation is no better this time. So please do not criticise again for consultations. And we have to remember that this council will be heavily reliant on the services in each library in the community. We need to have a wide open access to libraries so that our residents can apply for universal credit, and we will rely on that income through universal credit. So to say now that we're going to be closing facilities that are vital to our community and our own income is just a silly view to be taken on it. We need to look at everything holistically and the knock-on effects that this is all going to have, not just in a one direction, but all through what we do in the council. And furthermore, I'm very happy to support Kenneth Baird's recommendation.
Thank you, Kels Johnson. We'll move. I'll allow one more speaker.
Councillor Parry makes the comment that the SNP have always been consistent that they could afford to do both, have the new centre and keep all the facilities open. But they obviously went ahead or allowed plans to go ahead to remove the budget. I would ask Councillor Parry a simple question. Why, when it was made clear to you at the BTSG that the services to communities savings that were to be made included the closure of these facilities, why did you not instruct the officers to remove these from the strands of work that they were doing? It's quite clear for the paperwork that you were made aware, and as Derek says, it's quite clear from the handwritten notes for the BTSG meetings that you were aware that they were included. If it was always your intention to keep these facilities open and have all the facilities in the new school, why did you not simply instruct them to remove that from the work stream that they were involved in? Councillor Johnston, you're going on about secret meetings that they've been set up with. We're talking about here about community involvement and community engagement. My understanding is that Brian Pottinger actually asked for that group to be set up to find solutions to what was required for the centre in Newton Grange, but he actually didn't take part. I think he asked for it to happen, but took a step back. Up till recently, there's been no other elected member involvement other than the last meeting of that group. I think all three elected members were invited to attend. I was the only one that did. I think you may have been ill. I'm not having a go at you for no attending. I attended that simply to update myself on exactly where that group was going. It's never been a secret, and I'm sure that every councillor in that area has been aware that these meetings, and have actually probably, I would expect them to have discussed them at community council meetings and other meetings as well.
I'll allow Councillor Parry to address the question to her, and then we will go to a vote after that.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. I would like to pick up that point with Councillor Muirhead, because we had quite a discussion about it at the last BTSG, and I made it absolutely crystal clear that the SNP have never taken a decision to close those facilities, nor any budget related to closing those facilities. And I mean, I think we could sit here all day and debate this point, but I'm quite happy to move on. I will make absolutely crystal clear again that the council decision in June 2013 was to build a school with community facilities, with no closures, a like-for-like school replacement, relocated and no closure of existing facilities at New Battlepool, Mayfield Leisure Centre, Mayfield Library. And the only people that voted against that at the time were the Labour Group, and the only people voting for the closures right now are the Labour Group.
I think people will make a judgment as to why you've no answered my question.
No, I'm not prepared to continue with this back and forward. We could be here. It's a big, busy agenda. So, Councillor Baird moved the amendment to the recommendation first, so I would invite him to sum up first, and then Councillor Muirhead to sum up his recommendation to be approved, and then obviously we'll the addition of any fifth to do with the current facility. We'll have a vote then. Councillor Baird.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. Just quickly, I mean, we fully understand that there's a strong argument for you can't have two identical facilities right next to each other. That's a fair thing. What we need is concrete plans of what happens to these sites after the fact, and that's what we don't have yet, and that's why I put this amendment forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Muirhead.
Yeah, I think we need to move on here and make it quite clear to the public what the position is. I think one of the points that we need to make is that the budget gap has actually grown because we have reinstated the money that was to be saved from the closure of the libraries in this particular item here. Newton Grange Library. But I think it's important that we move on and make it clear to the public what needs to happen here. But I think it's really important, as I said and Derek said, that we make sure that the users of the current facilities in Mayfield and Newton Grange are accommodated within the new facility.
I think, Chair, if I may at this point just make sure that the vote is clear. First of all, we have the motion from Councillor Baird that the recommendations 1 and 4 only be approved by the Council. Could I have a show of hands in favour of that recommendation?
6.
And then there's the amendment from Councillor Muirhead that not only do recommendations 1 to 4 be accepted, but also a fifth recommendation that all facilities be accommodated. Apologies.
6.
In that case, Chair, in the event of a tie, then the matter will go down to the Chair's second or casting vote.
I cast, obviously, with the Labour Group amendment and include number 5, a fifth issue to ensure that all groups can be accommodated. Thank you. We now go on to item 8.6, which is financial strategy 2018-19 to 2021-22, a report by Gary Fairley. Thank you.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. This report provides Council with an update on the Council's financial strategy through to 21-22. As you'll realise, the report predates the Scottish Government's draft budget and grant settlement announced last Thursday. Deputy Provost, I'll briefly update members on the key points from the report itself and then provide an update on our initial assessment of the implications of the provisional grant settlement. Section 3 of the report sets out the background in advance of the grant settlement, which started with the UK budget back in the 22nd of November. That resulted in a 0.7% cash increase in the Scottish Block grant for next financial year. Members will also be aware of the discussion paper that was issued by the Cabinet Secretary for Finance and the Constitution back on the 2nd of November around income tax. And we also saw during the run-up to the budget paper published by COSLA, Fair Funding for Essential Services, which set out COSLA's case for local government. When the report was written, the projections for grant were based on a 3.25% cash reduction at a national level. Clearly, that position's changed somewhat. Sections 4 to 5 of the report provide an update on the cost of service provision and the projected budget shortfalls for each of the years. Now, that's the margin by which current cost of service delivery is expected to is projected to exceed the available income. Council should note the increase from previous reports and the reasons for that are set out in Table 3 on page 103. Section 6 provides a sensitivity analysis and Section 7 sets out indicative allocations to the Midlothian Integrated Joint Board. In addition to the indicative allocation sum set out in Table 5 on page 105, it's recommended that the additional resources that are earmarked in the provisional grant settlement for health and social care, that's £66 million nationally and £976,000 for Midlothian, are also included in the indicative allocation to the IJB. Section 8 of the report goes on to provide an update on the proposed change programme with the overall position set out in Table 10 on pages 109-110. That details a remaining gap at that time projected of £2.187 million for next year, rising to £9.7 million. Council's attention is also drawn to Appendix 1, which provides an interim overview of the engagement activity. It's the intention that a detailed report on engagement activity will be provided to all members early in the new year, and also the overview considered by the Business Transformation Steering Group when it next meets on the 15th of January. I'd ask members to also note that the work is ongoing to develop further proposals to address the budget challenge, and also to reflect on the existing proposals as a consequence of the engagement feedback. Again, that information is targeted to be shared with the Business Transformation Steering Group on the 15th of January. Sections 8.2 to 8.6 provide an update on savings targets for the strands of the change programme, and these now reflect the savings associated with the property rationalisation considered a moment or two ago. There have been other changes since the last report in October, and these are summarised underneath Section 10. The reserves position is set out in Table 12, and with the risks on the financial strategy, particularly those that relate to the key assumptions set out in Section 12.2. At this stage, before turning to the recommendations, if I can just touch on last week's grant settlement. The settlement itself was described as a cash flat settlement for 18-19, but after accounting for the additional resources for early years, health, social care, teachers' pay and other new pressures, it represents a 1.5% or £153 million cash cut in core funding at a national level for local government. Whilst this might not be as bad as has previously been assumed in financial strategy reports, the Scottish Government proposed budget also confirmed the lifting of a public sector pay cap with a guaranteed minimum of increase of 3% for public sector workers who earn under £30,000. Whilst this is government policy and only applies directly to 44 public bodies, importantly it acts as a benchmark for all major public sector workforce groups. So accordingly, alongside reflecting the proposed settlement and future financial strategy reports, I feel it's also appropriate to increase the provision that had previously been made for pay awards from 1.5% to align with the government's pay policy. Accounting for that, in overall terms, the net impact of the settlement, changes in pay and other costs equates to a £0.8 million improvement from the position that's reported in the council papers. I would say the work's continuing to assess the settlement and the impact on the budget and the base budget. And again, an update of that position will be provided to BTSG on the 15th of January. The finance circular setting out the provisional total funding forms the basis of consultation between Government and COSLA ahead of the Local Government Finance Scotland Order, which is being presented to Scottish Parliament in late February 2018. That circular also indicated that any individual authority not intending to agree the offer of grant and accept the full package has been requested to write to the Cabinet Secretary no later than the 19th of January. The correspondence indicates that if the package is not agreed, a revised and less favourable offer will be made. The Cabinet Secretary's letter to the Leader of the Council has been copied to the leaders of the other groups, and today it's recommended that Council remit to the Leader to respond to the Cabinet Secretary. Members should also note the circular indicates the allocations are only provisional, and that indicates that local authorities should not set their final budgets on the basis of these, but wait until final allocations are confirmed in late February. Members will also note the passage of the budget through Parliament might also see revisions to the settlement. Accordingly, in addition to the recommendations in the report, it's recommended that Council makes provision to consider its final budget at a special meeting later in February if necessary, and remits the arrangements for that to the Director of Resources. Further information was published yesterday by SPICE, Scottish Parliament's Information Centre, on the budget, and that's available on the Parliament's website and gives a 32-page briefing on the impact of the settlement for local government. Deputy Provost, I'll pause at this stage. Happy to answer any questions on the report, provide clarification of any issues associated with the grant settlement as best I can. Otherwise, Council is asked to consider the recommendations set out in Section 14 on pages 116 and 117 of the report. And also, as amended, to note the revised assumptions for future pay awards, the initial assessment of the grant settlement, the recommendation in relation to the indicative allocation for the IGB, that it be increased, the uplift for pay, and to remit to the leader of the council to respond to the Cabinet Secretary and also make provision for a special council meeting late in February to consider the budget if necessary. Thanks, Deputy Provost.
Thank you, Mr. Fairley. Okay, anyone, any questions to Mr. Fairley? No questions? Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. I have got a couple of questions and a couple of comments to make as well. The first comment is just around the process in terms of Midlothian. I was grateful to be passed on those budget tables in terms of Midlothian's allocations. However, I am a little disappointed that it's Tuesday and that we're sitting here having a paper on the financial strategy and that group leaders or indeed all councillors haven't been briefed on what that means in terms of Midlothian's budget as yet. I was really pleased to see the local government settlement figures come through on Thursday. I think that Derek Mackay has done a really good job in terms of balancing tax proposals by raising tax for those who can pay it most, and quite rightly so, and making sure that public sector is protected, and raising the pay cap, I think, is a good thing, for all that it came across quite negative in terms of the Chamber. And I think the other thing that I'd like to point out, just Gary touched on it there, is the spice briefing that came out yesterday. And although there was a cash flat settlement for local government, what that means in terms of individual local authorities can differ. However, the spice briefing in terms of Midlothian shows that the provisional revenue allocations, a like-for-like comparison, real terms percentage change, shows Midlothian as having the least change in the whole for every single local authority in Scotland, which I'm sure everybody will welcome that news in terms of when we go forward in our budget. I just have a couple of questions, and some are mostly in terms of the budgets and also in terms of the appendix. I'm happy to split them. I think the first question, it would be really good if when Derek's summing up, he can give some detail around when the Labour Group plan to publish their budget proposal and their amendment. What's went out at the moment has been officers' proposals. I think that should have been there should have been a consultation on an amendment as well, particularly given the three-party system that we're working in at the moment. It means that we're probably all going to pitch up on the day with a different amendment. And I know in East Lothian, the Labour Group there have looked at publishing their amendment at their previous cabinet before full council. I don't think that it's an unreasonable request to ask the administration who run this council to publish their budget with at least a week or two advance notice so that all councillors and the public can consider it. I have a further question around the quality impact assessment that goes along with this paper. In terms of the quality impact assessment and the detail in it, I was really disappointed to see that the detail quite rightly relates to the impact on staff, but it doesn't give any impact in terms of communities. So when we look at, for example, cutting welfare services, it quite rightly looks at the staff demographics, but it does nothing to give any detail or impact report for councillors and what that means to our community. So before February, I would really like to see something more substantial come back so that the public and us can make a much better decision on that. And in terms of the actual responses themselves, I was really disappointed at the responses. And I have a couple of queries about the questions, perhaps more for the Chief Executive. So the total number of individual comments received was 1,300, but the figures underneath don't tally to that. So I would like to know where that number came from and what those individual comments relate to, where those individual comments are and how councillors can see them. I note that there's been 220 emails, for example, 180 electronic survey forms. I would like to see them and know where they are, and I would like it to be pointed out to all councillors where they are as well. I think it's disappointing that only 158 people managed to attend the community engagement meetings. In my opinion, these were badly timed. They were all at night, so a lot of people with kids or other varying care and responsibilities wouldn't be able to attend. The numbers were very limited. It wasn't very well advertised. And I think there's been a fair bit of that feedback coming through from community groups as well. So I don't think there's anything I'm saying here that that we don't know about. So I'm not looking to make any grand political statements, gestures or move anything. It would just be really good if we could get some of that information just now, the rest of it before February, and if Derek's summing up, if he can let us know when Labour plan on publishing their budget, that would be great. The last question, which is perhaps more a question for those in terms of employment, is I noticed that there has been a few advertisements for posts and such like. How does that fit in with the supposed recruitment freeze? And in terms of staff who have had conversations about the lack of security in their job, I would like an assurance that there would be no further movement on that before Christmas, and to make sure that those difficult conversations are being had with staff directly and not just going out in all staff emails or correspondence over the festive period. Thank you, Deputy Provost.
Thank you, Councillor Parry.
Would you like to answer some of the questions?
Yes, thank you, Jill. I'll try and pick up on any of the points that Councillor Parry asked about, but we'll talk about the public engagement, because as far as I can recall, I can't remember very many public meetings for the last administration on budget stuff. And what I can recall is seeing Councillor Parry at one single public engagement. Only two SNP members that I can recall seeing at them, which were Councillor Baird, came to a couple, and at one stage, if I mind, Colin came along to another one. But certainly I never seen Councillor Parry turning up at any of the public engagement meetings. Talks about us publishing our budgets in advance. I think once we have the budget settlements, and I think once everybody has the budget settlements, I mean, the announcement was last Thursday. Officers throughout the country are still working through the details and what that all means, what's ring-fenced, what's in, what's out. I mean, just even at this stage, I'm kind of confused, because we're continually be told that this is a no-strings, there are no sanctions applied to this, yet the letter I've received quite clearly sets out sanctions if we didn't take the whole package. And in fact, I think the wording is that we will receive a substantially lower offer if we didn't take the full package. How that can be a no sanctions budget? And I've got to say, I actually challenged Derek Mackay when I met him, when he told us it was a no sanctions budget last year. And I sort of made the point. Said, so we are free to put up account. I would see that as a breach of trust, and that's all he says. Didn't he say that there would be sanctions imposed? But I'm going to be honest, in reading the letter for him, it looks awfully like there are sanctions. And I've got to say, it's quite difficult, because the letter then written to me is asking me to accept by the 19th. Now, I can neither accept nor decline, because the reality is we're at stage one of the Scottish budget, and indeed, I don't think Derek Mackay knows what his budget offer is until he gets it through the final stage on that. So once we've got a lot more clarity on the budget stuff, then I'm sure we will. But one of the things I'm really, and I agree with Councillor Parry, because I see in her Facebook page and regularly in some of her communications, she talks about the Labour budget, and she's continued to call it a Labour budget. And we're glad she's actually now discovered, actually, this is actually the officers that have put forward these proposals. So again, we start to get to this, say one thing in public and another thing in the council chamber. So the reality is we'll publish your budgets as soon as we have all the information, and we've listened to the numerous members of the public, groups, organisations, workers and trade unions that have responded. And we'll continue listening all the way through till as late as possible in January, till we get full clarity on where we are. To call the budget settlement welcome, or to congratulate Derek Mackay in any way at all, I find completely strange. We talk about smoking mirrors. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Unfortunately, this time, the Lord is the Scottish Parliament. They didn't cut us by over 3%, they cut us by 1.5%. Hallelujah, I mind Maggie Thatcher doing that years ago. And she was really good at it. Derek Mackay's learnt very well from her. The Lord taketh, the Lord giveth away, Derek Mackay giveth, Derek Mackay taketh away. Because he then announces, we've got a minimum 3% pay rise. And by the way, a welcome announcement for that. And I think it's about high time that the staff...
Provost, can I make a point of order, please, Deputy Provost? One of my colleagues just pointed out that, Derek, you're actually being blasphemous and offensive to those of us who might be religious. So if you could change your language...
I certainly looked at the religious reps and I didn't see them getting really upset about this, but I apologise wholeheartedly if by using that statement or that comparison that it has offended anyone. However, Chair, I'll go back to where I was. To call this a good settlement, I'm going to say, takes my breath away and defies belief. We've got this welcome 3% pay increase, minimum pay increase to staff under £30,000 to public sector workers. And you know what? I welcome that because it's about high time that the staff that are delivering on the front line, and that will only matter to me whether that's the nurses, whether that's the people working within the police services, or whether it's the care workers in the council, they should all be treated the same. And I would be expecting, and I'm glad to hear Gary saying, we'll need to rebalance our thoughts on what the pay award will be to reflect the announcement for the Scottish Government. That's the welcome side. The problem with that is there is no money in the government settlement to pay that. While the government have announced that local government workers will be paid a minimum of 3% more, no money has come to the councils in that budget settlement to pay that. So therefore, as I say, Derek Mackay giveth, Derek Mackay taketh away. Simple as that, because we now to find that funding. The real figure here is we now have a 1.5% cut to service, and then when you add in additional burdens, that just pushes it straight back up again. So we're ending up, and I think I caught Gary in saying something like £800,000 to the better, and I suppose anything to the better has to be welcome. But when you put that in a context to what was announced with the Westminster government, so let's make this clear. Theirs was a 0.07% rise in revenue terms, and we are still faced with a 1.5% cut in revenue terms. So this time I'll no be pointing down south to blame them. We'll be pointing in there to blame the Scottish Parliament, because that's where this lies. And I'm hoping that some common ground can be found in the Scottish Parliament between all the parties, that the settlement ends up reflecting what the Scottish Government have been given for Westminster, and that's a 0.7 increase. And that doesn't reflect the massive growth that we put to Derek Mackay that we are taking. That doesn't touch the massive growth, the £14 million addition we need for education to meet the demand for the growth that we've got in Midlothian. No ask to take, by the way, we have to take that growth. So therefore, to call this a welcome settlement, I'm sorry, I'm astounded. I certainly will be calling it welcome. The fact of the matter is, even with the revised figures there, we're now still looking at a £13 million budget gap just for this year. Just for this year.
Thank you, Councillor Milligan. With regards to the point of order, I think because he apologised immediately, I think that we'll just move on with that. Whilst the Chief Executive maybe have a discussion with regards to the workers' morale?
Well, there were a number of points that Councillor Parry raised, so just to endeavour to address them. And firstly, in relation to the consultation, the reason why the numbers don't stack up precisely is because the total at the top relates to individual comments, and then in fact the subtotals beneath relate both to individual comments, group comments, and indeed petitions in some cases. The other thing I'd say about that is this summary was obviously produced prior to the completion of the consultation. There will be a much fuller analysis which we'll bring forward early in the new year, and I think there has been, as you can see, a lot of engagement and input from various sources. The second issue was about advertisements for posts. There is a recruitment freeze in place, but that doesn't include essential frontline posts. If we didn't fill these posts, then because of the requirements placed upon us, we would probably have to resort to agency. And I think the preference of the council is that we should seek permanent employment where agency would be the necessary alternative. And I'm talking about frontline jobs in education, care, and elsewhere. And in relation to the staffing issues, we are working very closely with the trade unions. I think there are great efforts being put in to ensure that these are correctly and well handled, including issues round about voluntary severance, which has been discussed before in this chamber. And of course, all of that is being done in the context of the budget decisions, which are they are yet to be made, and clearly that has an impact on what can be done at this stage and what needs to await final decisions by the council. I think to pick up on the Deputy Provost point about the impact on staff, I think this is a very difficult time for staff. I agree that many of them will be pleased to see the end of the cap on in relation to public sector pay, and that has been a long time coming, even though, as Gary said in his introduction, that does create real challenges for the council in terms of funding that. What I would say, and you know, even in the context of the consultation, where you know quite a number of staff have responded to you know, my request for their input and comments, that what is I think very commendable is how you know how innovative staff are and how keen they are to engage and try and find the best solution. So it is a difficult time for staff. That isn't going to change anytime soon. And I think it's important that, you know, as managers, as senior managers in the organisation, we continue to work with them in the best possible way and in partnership with the unions to get us through this difficult period.
Thank you, Chief Exec. Councillor Beard.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. There were two things I just want to ask the Leader of the Council. So an hour ago, we approved the report from Audit Scotland that confirmed that there was a 7.6 cut to the Scottish Government's revenue fund from Westminster. So it was to understand that whose fault is it really that we're getting cut, our funding's getting cut. The second point was that I note that even with the changes and the improvements made, budget shortfall is still the same. And I kind of very quickly glossed over that point because we're now, from the 10th of October, have already overspent £600,000. So you have lost control of the budget that you've already got. So explain that to me. Are we in a good position or are we not? Is it the Scottish Government's fault or is it your fault?
Dear. The Audit Scotland report refers to last year, brother. Go have a look, we'll look at it and try and figure out what it is. We're actually moving to a worse position because we're keeping Dander Hall Library open, Dander Hall Leisure Centre open, Newton Grange Library open. Money use removed the funding fee. Money use removed the funding fee. Nae ifs, nae buts, nae whats about it. Use removed the funding fee and says we're no closing it. Well done.
Sorry, Deputy Provost, I just had a couple of questions that I didn't quite get an answer to, and I would really like
I'm
to...
I'm aware this is a very lengthy agenda, and I think we've... this is really crucial.
I would say that the point, particularly in the quality impact assessment, which isn't a political point, it's a very operational point that I feel should have an answer for both the benefit of councillors and members of the public as well. And if I could just respond to Derek's point on understanding orders, I believe that I've got the right to respond to a point made by Derek that I didn't attend in the community engagement meetings. Derek, if you had opened your ears at the beginning, I'd said that I thought that these were ill-timed because, in particular, people with care and responsibilities couldn't attend, and that is exactly why they have been attended by mostly male members in this council, and the demographics at the events were very similar. But that aside, I would like an answer to the quality impact assessments and when Labour are going to publish their amendment, or I don't know, maybe it is their budget. Who knows?
I think Councillor Milligan actually replied to that question, similar type question earlier on. So I think we will move on and ask that, sorry. We will allow Gary Feely to finish off.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. I can just pick up on the point of the quality impact assessment. Alongside the change programme that was published on 10th of October, individual quality impact assessments were brought forward for every one of those changes. There's an updated draft of the quality impact assessment here, but as the final officer proposals come forward early in the new year, the individual impact assessments and the overarching impact assessment will be further refined and updated. So it's really sharing with members as we go through the journey where we are with the quality impact assessments at each stage, but final versions will be brought forward early in the new year.
Thank you, Mr. Feely. Councillor Milligan.
Provost, just to finish up, can we agree to endorse the recommendations with the amendments that Gary put to us? But to specifically say that in the event, and this should only be if it's deadly necessary to change the budget meeting dates, that should be there should be a consultation with three political group leaders to make sure that the date, if there has to be, and it should only be if that has to be moved, I'm still keen that we actually go ahead with what's planned, and we'll hopefully have some agreement in the Scottish Parliament prior to then. But if it does have to move, that you as delegated to yourself, Gary, but in consultation with the three political leaders.
Sorry, I'm grateful for the noddy appreciation, but as far as I'm aware, that's not a recommendation that needs to be moved because it's covered under standing orders. If a meeting needs to be moved, that the Director of Resources can do that. I don't know why you're keen on moving the meeting, Derek. I'm going to try and not take that point personally. But, you know, I think we can actually set a budget in December if we wanted to, and I'm a little bit concerned that you're talking about moving budget meetings back already. The people in Midlothian need certainty about what this budget means.
Sorry, Kelly, no. It was Gary's suggestion.
Excuse me. Speak to the chair.
I don't think that it's necessary. It's but I'm not going to make a fuss about it.
Sorry, that's the point I just made. I don't think it's necessary. It was Gary that actually says in his statement that he wanted to move... Oh, for goodness sake. Sorry. Gary asked for that to be changed in the recommendations, Kelly. I think it's you needs to open your ears.
Councillor Milligan, can we move on and agree the proposals put forward regarding this paper? Thank you. Item 8.7 is the General Services Capital Plan, again by Gary Feely.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. This report provides members with an interim update on the General Services Capital Plan from that provided back in August. Section 2 of the report sets out updated projections of expenditure and also the impact of three projects elsewhere on today's agenda on the basis if those are approved. Members should note in terms of the Hopefield Primary School report that the Capital Plan report has updated financial implications from that set out in that report itself. So members are approving Capital Plan, which provides for the recommendations in the Hopefield report. Table 3 highlights the overall position on debt outstanding on general fund services, which is now projected to exceed the £124 million cap by 1920. The intention is a full review of the Capital Plan and the implications for future investment, whether in the learning estate or elsewhere across the Council's estate, is completed and brought forward to Council to consider alongside the budget in February. Deputy Provost, today Council simply asked to consider the recommendations set out in Section 6.
Thank you, Mr. Feely. Members, any questions? We're happy to agree this report. I think we've been here for over an hour and a half. I think we should have a 10-minute comfort break, if that's okay. Thank you.